I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could have me 5 mil a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Robbie Weekly.
Little reverse pass. Oh!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Wednesday episode of Rugby Weekly Extra. I hope your week is going well so far. We're on the run into a massive weekend of European action for the four provinces. Joining me to look ahead to those games as I squeak as though I'm back in puberty is Murray Kinsella of the 42. It's a one-take job, Murray. Let's keep it rolling. How are you doing?
Normally your voice is so level and deep and authoritative. That was a little slip, but I'm good. I'm excited because I love these weekends. Champions Cup, knockout stages, it just goes up a notch. And the matchups, I know when they first were unveiled or confirmed rather, people were a little bit underwhelmed because we'd seen some of them already, but you just look at the weekend ahead, even starting on Friday night with Quins versus Glasgow, two sides who just love to play ball. That's going to be open and brilliant. I think Stormers La Rochelle is really interesting to me, and maybe we'll come back to that one, and Munster Northampton is probably the other one where you think it's tough enough to call that, but really across the board they're great matchups, aren't they? Exeter Bath, like, you can, that'll probably go under the radar a bit in Ireland, but that's going to be a brilliant game, an old French game on Sunday as well, so there's loads to look forward to, and I'm going to be trying to catch every single bit of it if I can.
I think when the fixtures were confirmed, it felt underwhelming because we'd seen those games so recently. But with the passing of time, you gain an appetite for a Stormers La Rochelle rematch for sure. And some of those fixtures, as you say, are actually pretty mouthwatering. None more so than Saints Munster. And I wanted to start there because I would say that is the hardest game to call of the entire weekend, which should not be the case when you consider seedings. It should arguably not be the case when you consider both teams' form, even though Munster's has been like pretty steady of late. The fact that it's in Franklin's Gardens and that Northampton beat Munster on their own patch with 14 men earlier in this competition, in normal life or in a normal sport, or if you were dealing with a normal team, this should be an open and shut Northampton victory. And it just doesn't feel that way. Sure, it doesn't. And I would argue even more so for the fact that Munster were pretty poor against Cardiff. It just feels like there's another little backlash coming.
Northampton are 6-point favourites. So that's how the bookies view this. They actually think that Northampton are a better team and that all that evidence that you've cited there is more relevant than our gut feeling about Munster as a province and as an entity, that they always have this big performance in them. But actually the recent evidence even of this Munster team suggests that they can spring into full life very quickly. Like, go back to last season when they got beaten by Glasgow and Thomond Park, and you thought, that's it, that's them done, they're just not a good enough team. And then they go on their run away from home against all odds, really, in a few instances there, and they end up with a trophy. So I think they probably hold out that hope that things will really click. I think prior to the Cardiff game, they'd been moving in the right direction, trending in the right direction, but it was a period without rhythm due to the Six Nations. And now all of a sudden, they're at this point in the season where, I don't mean to be too dramatic, but it feels like a bit of a crossroads for them. You know, they had the success of last season. They obviously wanted to kick on, and they're obviously firmly in contention URC-wise for top four. They would love to earn a home semi-final, of course, quarter-final and semi-final. But just this Champions Cup campaign has been poor so far, let's be honest. They won one game to get through. They limped into the last 16 when they were top seeds and would have expected, with Bayonne coming to Thomond Park, to come out of that pool in a more dominant position. They didn't play well in the pool stages, and now they've got to produce a much better performance against a Northampton team who are confident, who are humming, who, yeah, as you mentioned before, have been excellent this season. So I think it's a massive one for Munster, especially with, like, there's bits of uncertainty going on. There's guys leaving. There's Snyman and Carberry going. Peter O'Mahony and Conor Murray, still nothing confirmed. Antoine Frisch's situation continues to be up in the air. And it feels like there's just a few bits out of place or waiting to kind of settle. And a win here would kind of skyrocket all that stuff. So I think it's a big, big weekend for Munster.
It's a really interesting point you make about it being almost a crossroads game for Munster. And I kind of have felt this way for a long time about this season's Champions Cup campaign. Even going back to an interview I did with Graham Rowntree earlier in the season where, now I should stress, he already knew this, but I was kind of stressing the importance of getting a home knockout run in Europe. Like, that's kind of the foundation upon which Munster is built. I know there's these magical away wins later into competitions, but I was just making a point to him, like, if you gain that solid footing to begin with in the last 16, and you can build from there. When your team is clearly built to actually thrive in the spring and the summer and the harder surfaces where they came to life last season, and where their form seems to track now two seasons in a row, where it feels like some of the pieces start to come together at the business end, I just felt as though this was a golden opportunity given their pool to get that kind of a footing, and they failed to do that. But where they could really transform their reputation as a team, and I think become more seriously considered as being belonging to the big boys table in Europe again, is if you go over and you knock off the Premiership leaders in a knockout game. And we've seen Munster do it loads of times in pool stages, and that's because at that stage, you know, the dust hasn't really settled on the Premiership season. It could be Gloucester or whoever are top, and Munster will go to King's Home and do a job on them. This time it feels like these are the legitimate Premiership leaders. They're the best team in England right now. You're playing them on their own patch. Mind you, it'll probably be half and half in terms of the support on the day. I just feel like that could be, I was going to say the statement win of Rowntree's Munster tenure. That's actually not fair. Winning a trophy is very much that, particularly in Cape Town. But I would say it'd be top three. It'd be one like that could be potentially transformative, right? Even in terms of the way Munster would be viewed for the remainder of the competition, where other teams would look at them going, oh shit, okay. No, like we can see what they're about now. You don't really want to play Munster ideally in a quarterfinal.
Well, I totally agree with you on your read of this Northampton team, because I was kind of waiting. I watched them from the very start of the season. I've really enjoyed them, but I was kind of waiting for them to, what's the phrase, to get their comeuppance, or to get exposed, or to get shown up as not quite there yet. But every time they've had to take another step, they've done it. They won away to Glasgow in the Champions Cup, beat Toulon, hammered Bayonne, which obviously Munster weren't able to do, and then won in Thomond Park with you know, their backs against the wall, down to 14 men, and it was right in the end game, and they show great mettle and maturity, and they've done that in the Premiership as well. So they do seem like the real deal without having won yet, without having taken that trophy-winning step, which Munster have. And Munster winning a trophy was ahead of schedule for everyone, even in their own eyes. They didn't expect that in their first season. And that kind of takes a bit of pressure off, but it also sets a standard for yourself that you've got to maintain and drive on from. And I think Europe was definitely the step that everyone wanted to see, and that hasn't been the case so far. But, you know, people will forget completely about the pool if they go and win in Northampton when they're, I suppose they are the underdogs again, but yet it wouldn't be a massive surprise for them to go and do it. So, yeah, I think they face a really stern test against a Northampton team who have lovely balance to how they play. In Thomond Park that day, it was wet weather, and they showed one aspect of their qualities, the kicking in particular. Finn Smith running the show, but Alex Mitchell at scrum half as well, really definitely mature and able to put some pressure back onto Munster. You know, you'd associate those home games on tough nights with Munster actually being the ones to suffocate and stifle the opposition, but Saints did that really well. They're very physical, and yet they can play outstandingly attractive rugby, particularly off set piece. Even in last weekend's game against Saracens, there was another couple of strike plays that were just brilliant. Sam Vesti, he's there in charge of their attack, and he clearly is very creative but very precise in how he coaches them as well. It's a slick, well-oiled machine. They can open up in phase as well, and the balance of those halfbacks is that both of them are quite creative as well. They're not just kicking halfbacks. Mitchell's really good at bouncing out and scooting from the ruck and making decisions on the fly based on how the defence is weak. And Smith as well, he has a lovely passing game. He can delay and pass short, very similar to Crowley actually, delay and pass short. He can play those lovely bridge passes over the top with just enough height to clear the defender, but low enough to allow the wing to sprint onto it. And he can bullet passes right across the face of defender. So they've kind of got the full bag of tricks, Saints. And it'll be interesting to see how their team selection ends up. They were missing a couple of guys last weekend. Mitchell was gone. It sounds quite positive on him, but George Furbank, the fullback, who people would have seen playing for England against Ireland, he missed as well with a calf issue. And the update yesterday from Phil Dowson, the director of rugby, wasn't quite as positive on him. And I think that would be huge in terms of potentially swinging a close game. He's been his England performance against Ireland wasn't a surprise in the end because he'd been so good for Saints. He's been more physical, and maybe that had been a weakness in his game before, but he's been really aggressive and assertive into contact, but also with the playmaking ability. He has played at 10 and he can kick really well. And even last weekend, it sounds like a close game, 40-31, but two of the tries were blocked down scores from Saracens, where you could see that Mitchell and Furbank were probably missed, you know, in terms of just being assured in that area. Generally, Northampton are brilliant there. So if you take those out of it, and fair play to Saracens for getting those scores, but it was actually quite an impressive Northampton win again. And they've kind of picked up where they left off prior to the Six Nations. And that would have been Dowson and Vesey's concern that, oh my God, we're on a massive roll here and this is just going to puncture it. But doesn't seem to have been the case.
No, that was a domination by Saints, and only further bolstering the idea that they are the top dogs, I should say, in England. Against the Sarri scene, they're coming in with a spring in their step. I think as well, you mentioned the halfbacks. That's one of the most interesting duels of the weekend across any game, because in that first Munster-Northampton game, I actually think Craig Casey played for an hour arguably better than he's ever played for Munster. It was an unbelievable performance, right? And you had Jack Crowley ticking along pretty well. But once it got soggy, and once Munster's forwards were a little bit underpowered, and it became this kind of an arm wrestle, and the two Munster guys were kind of choked for space, like, Alex Mitchell, who scored a try in that game, began to run the show. Finn Smith had been running the show pretty much all day. Like, Finn Smith came over to your turf if you're Jack Crowley, and he mugged you off. All of the talk going into that game and around that time was about how you were the messiah type figure in Irish rugby. You were the guy. Finn Smith still hasn't really made his mark at international level, but if you were looking at those 80 minutes alone, you'd say Finn Smith is a better out half than Jack Crowley. I'm not saying it's the case. I'm just saying if you looked at it that way, and I think this is a massive opportunity for Munster's two halfbacks. I would say even Casey, just to make the point that, no, I can get the better of a really strong test scrum half. Like, make the point to Andy Farrell ahead of a South Africa tour, like, no, I am the guy. You know, like, where it feels as though Ireland don't really have a massive line of, like, talent in terms of succession. Craig Casey has an opportunity to do it here in, like, this is close to the biggest stage in European rugby. And if you go over and roll them back over, it's a massive message to send, I think, from both Casey and Crowley, right?
For sure. It's probably Casey's chance to fully nail down that first choice status. And I know he has been first choice ahead of Conor Murray, but, like, even if you think of the URC final, which isn't that long ago, it was Conor Murray who started that game. And a bit of a strange Six Nations for Casey, I think. When he got that start against Italy, you think, oh, he'll kick on now and be more involved. But they've certainly maintained faith with Conor Murray as the backup. So, yeah, that's kind of in the background. I think what Casey and Crowley have, from what I hear, have got better at and done better this season is be really collectively focused. And listen, you always have to be as a halfback. You're the game managers, but I think they're really broad in their view of the game, and they're on top of other people a lot and making sure that everyone's doing their jobs well. And that's how halfbacks have to develop, particularly at 10. Like, Crowley, I think, now is a very good speaker in the group, and he's nailing the kind of key tactical messages pretty consistently. But he's also well able to take a game by the scruff of the neck. And you saw that last weekend. Like, his individualism was a key part of Munster getting over the line. His try, obviously, with outstanding footwork, which is such a point of difference for him. There aren't many guys who move the way he does as an out half. Accelerates really well. He can step off both feet. He's got excellent balance when he's tackled, and he's got a nasty edge as well, so he can actually ride through contact well. And even while he's learning to run a team better, he already does it at a high level, obviously, starting for Ireland, it's really encouraging that he's still got that streak of being able to create things himself with his own athleticism. I thought he adapted well to Cardiff's really strong defence. It took a while to get there, and I'm imagining messages coming on, you know, we've got to go in behind them. And then he did it twice. He chipped twice, and the second time Nankivell got it back. And I think those are, again, good signs to see, because this Munster team, when they've had bad days, they've just probably been over-focused on their identity of being a multi-phase attacking team, and we'll keep the ball and we'll eventually break you. Sometimes you just got to be smarter with that, and they've got to adapt a bit earlier maybe. And then the other side of it, I think the halfbacks are in pretty good nick. The other side of it is just that physical edge that Saints are going to bring that I mentioned. I think I mentioned before on this pod, Charlie Morgan did a really good piece about Northampton just putting a bit of weight on last summer and focusing on being more assertive and dominant in contact, and that's been the case. And when you have Courtney Laws in there, you're always going to have that edge. I think Tom Pearson's gone to another level in that. And for anyone who didn't see the game last weekend, he had a lovely bit of niggle with Ben Earl at one stage where he does the Ben Earl celebration into Ben Earl's face. It was quite comical, but it was just a nice moment where a younger guy who's been in the England environment now showed that he's not going to stand back to any of those guys. Even him and Owen Farrell had a little exchange there, but he's an example of someone who's been a pretty dominant force. And Munster, they missed that last weekend. And again, it's the other aspect of when they lose and when they have bad performances, they just don't get the physical roll on. Like, I look at that Toulon game, and I remember saying at the time, their front five was immense. Nearly all of them were 9 or 10 out of 10. And that's when Munster are at their best, when guys who maybe aren't always dominant physical specimens just deliver that. You know, when Niall Scanlon was at that level that day in Toulon, it was eye-opening the difference it made. Obviously, they hope to have Orji Snyman back, and that adds a huge amount to that part of the game. But I think Ollie Yeager will be a miss. You know, he's still on that longer-term injury list, and that's a big blow because he is someone who can kind of punch and can also play. So they need to get more. They just need to get more from their tight carriers, because when they get on a roll, when they get a little bit of front foot or quick ball, even on one ruck, they're very, very hard to defend with the ingenuity of their kind of swinging backs and their ability to pick out space. But that's a big question for me, is can they get that roll on?
Yeah, I'd say the game could literally hinge on the availability of Snyman, to be honest. And that's where I think it'd be futile to get into predictions now. We'll be chatting again on Friday and we'll have teams and can kind of make a more informed judgment. It's just an absolutely salivating game for the moment. Leinster against Leicester Tigers is less so, if we're honest about it. It just feels as though a game Leinster should win and probably will win. I would say that there's a fair case to be made. It's about how they actually go about it as well. It's not a foregone conclusion, to be fair. And I'm sure they won't see it as such. But you kind of want to see them picking up where they left off against the Bulls as well, Mar, don't you? Like, maybe this is a game in which the opportunity could be there to make a bit of a statement of their own. If they can rattle up a bit of a score here, I'm not saying it's going to be 50 points, but just make it a bad day for the Tigers and have some of those kind of standout performances, the likes of Rob Russell, Jack Conan, guys like that from the last day. You have to say, like, they'll be top of whatever power rankings I'm asked to do for next week.
They're 16-point favourites, and that's very thoroughly justified, and maybe that's feeding the relative lack side about the contest, but I'm incredibly excited to see how Leinster back up last weekend. I think they've made a couple of statements already this season. La Rochelle away, it's a statement victory, and they were just vicious that day. That was the edge that I liked about it. I like the kind of wildness that this Leinster team has all of a sudden. Let's be honest. Like, the last few seasons, they've been such an impressive machine, real smooth running, but a bit, they weren't too nice. I won't go that far to say it, but they didn't feel like kind of crazed physical specimens, which they kind of do now. And I know there's obviously loads of structure around it, and they defend with a very clear system and they work really hard, but I think they've almost been unleashed a little bit with Nienaber, probably that influence to be more chaotic is probably the wrong word. I'm struggling to find the right word, but that wild edge to them is something I like. And I thought the other statement was last weekend. It was an excellent performance. And the big focus has obviously been on the second half, justifiably so. But I thought, even though they go in at halftime trailing, I thought they won the key big moments in that first half. And that's something that this Leinster team has to do when the pressure is on in these bigger knockout games. Like, think about the scrum, which starts badly for them. I didn't fully agree with all the early calls in the scrum. Even the first one I thought could have gone Keane Healy's way, but it didn't. And suddenly there's this sense, oh my God, the Bulls are getting a dominance. And then 24th minute, Healy just disintegrates that. He just gets forward. And whatever happens after that, it doesn't really matter. But he found a way to get forward there and win a penalty. That's a massive turning point in the game for me. The other one is the 28th minute where they get a penalty very close to the post, and your instinct is just kick the goal, get the scoreboard moving, but they don't even seem to think about it. They just say, we're going to the corner here. And that's really ballsy against this Bulls team who they defend Maul's superbly, and Leinster get a Maul try there. It just showed a serious attitude, I think. And again, I think that chips away psychologically at a team like the Bulls when you go and you do that and you're that assertive and confident. And the last one in the first half was 38 minutes when they're down to 14. Aronson gets up the right-hand side. He sits down Rob Russell, But then we see another one of those barge turnovers from Leinster, the counter-rucking work of Conan and Lowe. It's Lowe who hooks the ball back with his foot. People probably remember. That's a metre out from the Leinster line. And if the Bulls do manage to score there, well, then that's an incredibly big blow right before halftime. I know they get a penalty still to go in ahead, but I thought that was a brilliant moment for the defence in a situation where it looked like they were going to concede. They scrambled really well and found a way, and that's something they've been doing. It's been a massive team, both that technique and tactic at the ruck, but also how they've recovered. And I even though Bulls were ahead, I think they probably went in at halftime going, geez, these guys they're on it. And as we saw just after the halftime break, they go out and they kind of move into a lead that is a little bit insurmountable for the Bulls, even though they stuck in it for about 60, 61. I thought it was just a real serious first half in many ways from Leinster.
Bernard Jackman was making the point on Monday's pod that he still thinks Ross Byrne is the quarterback. He's the guy who would start at 10. Harry Byrne was really impressive against the Bulls in what was one of Leinster's two biggest games so far this season. Which way would you lean if you were making that selection call?
Start Sam Prendergast. No, his time will come. I don't know. I haven't heard anything. I don't know which way they're going to go. And it's cool for Leinster that there is that bit of uncertainty. At the start of the season, I would have said absolutely Ross Byrne, and he's their top guy in their pecking order. And I think he's earned that, and I think that shouldn't be dismissed. I'm definitely one who has a long-term view on these things. Like, Ross Byrne has earned status as the top of their pecking order at number 10 over the last few years. Even though he came on last weekend on Friday, he had a brilliant moment in attack where he puts Conan through. Lovely pass, and showed he has that to his game. He's a brilliant goal kicker. He's got a high percentage again this season. He's 80% plus. He's higher than 80%, which is helpful. I know they're big favourites for this game, but the great thing is that Harry Byrne has made it a genuine question. I think he's had big performances on the big days. Like La Rochelle away, before he got injured, I thought he was excellent. This Bulls game, he was excellent. Leicester away, for the pool stages, he was really good. And that's just brilliant for them to see, because it's been known for ages just how much promise he has, and you're starting to see it more consistently now. There's still little moments in his game where it doesn't go right, but I think people are kind of over focusing on that with him. Everyone makes mistakes, you know. Johnny Sexton, when he's at his peak, still makes a mistake. Every out half does it, but I think there's almost a perception built in some people's head that he's an error prone player, and maybe they're a bit more flashy, the errors, but he's getting great reward from his kicking game. I thought it was varied against the Bulls. Some of the diagonal bombs were really well judged, and he's got that ability. He can pass really snappily. I think that's one thing that Ireland really like about him, is that ability to be brave probably with his passing, and at times that'll lead to little intercepts like we saw against the Bulls. But he was excellent even for the Milne try. Some slick handling from him, and I love that little play again that they do. All the Irish teams do it so well, where he is the obvious first receiver, they skip him and they get away down the right hand side. So the answer to your question, I mean, I'd probably lean towards Ross Byrne based on that longer term quality, but Harry Byrne really has put his hand up.
Ross was exceptional against Zebra the week before. He hasn't really done anything to suggest that he should be usurped. It's just, you know, when you see a younger guy really thrive the way Harry did, it's fair to ask the question, I think, as you say.
Totally.
Sam Prendergast's time will surely come, and I would say Harry's will do before long. Before we chat about Connacht and Ulster in the Challenge Cup, just wanted to ask you about a couple of those other Champions Cup games. And I really mean a couple, because I think Stormers La Rochelle is maybe the pick of the fixtures outside of Saints Munster. Which way do you see that actually going, Mark?
I think La Rochelle will edge it. And I, like, sorry, John Dobson, but I hope they do, because I want Leinster La Rochelle again. I really want another repeat of that. And La Rochelle are actually narrow favourites. I was just looking, even though they're travelling all the way down. Stormers weren't great last weekend. They've been patchy enough. And I know that when they have a flurry of their top level, it's impossible to contain. But I think La Rochelle, a patchy season of their own, but the good patches have been really impressive over the last couple of months. Really oppressive, really dominant, just playing on top of teams. And I think their nous in Champions Cup, it'll matter a lot. I think the fact that they'll want to go at Leinster again, like they seem to have more edge towards Leinster in some ways, probably based on Rog being there. than vice versa, but that'll be an epic quarterfinal, and I think La Rochelle will edge it. What do you reckon?
Dead air. I really don't know. I would say gun to head La Rochelle, yeah. But I think the Stormers being a little bit under par against Ulster just leads me to believe that they have an eye on this game as well. And like Cape Town, when they're on it, you know, and they would be on it even more so, you'd imagine, than that pool game. Oh, it's a brilliant game. Brilliant, brilliant game.
Mm. Plus the fact that Stormers haven't shown it in Champions Cup rugby yet, and that'll be a big motivation for them. And maybe that was in their minds last week and looking ahead and maybe doing a bit more work on La Rochelle than they would have in a normal week. They're like, that's an exciting club, Stormers. They've got their investment now, including kind of share from the Arda Group, who Johnny Sexton works for, and there's an Irish angle to it there. But I spoke to John Dobson maybe a year ago, and he said, if we really get our house in order, it's going to be frightening for the world rugby what we have. The potential within the Western Cape, the support they have, is, you can see it every weekend. It's incredible that they've got 20,000 plus regularly, and it's quite fanatical. And, you know, he one thing sticks out to me. He goes, you know, every year there's five or six locks who are good enough to play top level professional rugby who maybe don't even make the grade here or aren't noticed or whatever. He said, we're only scratching the surface of potential. So I think them being financially on a sounder footing and more organised behind the scenes, yeah, that's a bit of a scary prospect.
In a word, Mer, call this one for me. Exeter against Bath.
Exeter.
I agree. Connacht and Ulster have a serious opportunity in the Challenge Cup this time around, given their struggles in the URC. This competition is open to be won, I think, if you look at the other clubs involved in it. It feels as though Connacht, to begin with, are actually targeting this fixture with Pau as well, which might be a little bit dangerous because Pau are a serious outfit in their own right. But just when you see a flood of players coming back from various injuries and ailments and complaints, you kind of think with one or two of them, and really I have no evidence to suggest this, but it's just a suspicion I would have usually. It's like, could he have made last week? You know what I mean? And I mean, in Finney Beelam's case, for example, I kind of don't understand the situation there, but obviously Pete Wilkins and Connacht making the point he's become a father recently. We have to give him a little bit of time. And like in other seasons, you might have given him that time this weekend. That's kind of my point. Instead, he'll be locked and loaded and ready to go for this Challenge Cup game. I mean, how big a fixture is this in the context of Connacht's season, to your mind, Murr? And how winnable a fixture is it, if I could ask you that as well?
It's winnable if they're close to their most focused and disciplined and connected. But it's a tough fixture as well if they're not those things. Poe, like, they're a good side. We don't see them often because we don't get much top 14 here. But anytime I've seen them play, they've been quite excellent, and they've had some big results in the top 14, which is such a difficult league. So they're battle hardened as well. But I agree that this feels like a major opportunity for Connacht and for Ulster. You look across the teams that we were left in, and there's no real powerhouse there. You know, even the French clubs who are involved have maybe dipped away from former heights. The English ones haven't been consistent. You know, there's
Ospreys. You know,
yeah, Ospreys. No, like I'm looking across, and I'm not thinking there's clubs there who should definitely be better than the Irish province. I'm actually thinking the Irish province should be better than them. Like in Ulster, I know they've had their troubles, but Ulster's a big club with a strong budget, and they should absolutely be going after this silverware, because like winning a trophy is monumental for any group, for any player, for any development. It just kicks things on. You know, that taste of success is so satisfying that it makes you work harder again to go after it. So absolutely shouldn't be dismissed, even if it is the second tier of this you know, European/South African competition. This is still a big prize on offer here, and that's why I think, yeah, they are going all guns blazing, and should be, and should have had a strong focus on trying to win these games. Yeah, your bread and butter every weekend, URC, is important, but we have a couple of months left in the season, and you just go all out now. All out, and this weekend it starts there.
Do you think that arguably the way Connacht season is, or the remainder of Connacht season is laid out, you have an away trip to Munster, you have an away trip to Leinster, you've Stormers at home, I think at that point in a few weeks' time are going to be looking to lock in a home playoff game, that this might be their best avenue back to Champions Cup rugby? Like, do you think that may be the way that they're assessing it internally?
I would imagine so. It would have to be, because again, look across the teams, in the left in the competition. They're not as strong as the ones you just mentioned. They're not as they haven't been as good as those ones. So it should be the case. The thing with Connacht, you just don't know. You don't know what's coming. You just don't. They at times look like a fine team with, you know, when they have Bundy and when they have Finlay, those top class players, they add so much. The drop off is, I think, more obvious than in the other provinces when they're not there. And when they are good, they're excellent and they're clever and they're resilient, but it's just so unclear what's coming each week. It really is. And that's a frustrating thing, probably for them, but I mean, we've been talking about that for years. And then for Ulster, I thought it was much better last weekend in Cape Town. I know Stormers weren't great, but Ulster were way tougher and harder to beat and looked just more energetic, and there was more of a bounce in everything they did. So that's encouraging against a Montpellier team who have loads of big athletes and they have a fair bit of firepower in the back line, but they haven't had a great season and they're definitely, definitely beatable. So I think Ulster will be encouraged by what they did last weekend. And if they can build off that and have a bit more of an incisive edge in attack when they have lots of possession, then they should actually be good enough to go to France and win.
We have to fly on here because you are heading to Limerick for a Munster's press conference, and because equally the football family lads are trying to log on to the Zoom account so they can record their own podcast. So we'll leave it there. Mark, great to see you. Go well today.
Thanks, Gav.
Thanks a million to everyone at home as well. We'll be back on Friday for the free pod. And until then, mind yourselves.
But the boys in the better land. You're always talking about the boys in the better land. The boys in the better land. Join the stop names of the two double.